I think it's really important to be intentional about defining your focus. We talked about where you're going to play, where you're not going to play. Being intentional about defining what could be your future strength. If you're in a high growth environment, and if you're actually doing a good job, the number of opportunities will continue to expand exponentially, which is why you have to be intentional about defining what could be your future strength.
Welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
On this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, my guest is Navya Rehani Gupta, the Chief Product Officer at Peak, a vertical SaaS platform for tour operators. Navya, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Navya, I'm excited to dive in. But first, please tell the audience a little bit about your background and the career path that brought you to where you are now with Peak.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an engineer by education, specifically a semiconductor engineer who doesn't do semiconductors anymore. I found my love for product quite early in my career. I was working on Wall Street, building products for high net worth clients, making rich people richer. And then I found my passion to build products. I would be the person who would enjoy far more sitting down with customers, understanding what their problems are rather than actually coding them myself. So that what brought me to the beautiful world of product. And through building large scale products in different industries, every time I switched jobs, I switched industries. I worked on Wall Street. I worked for Mickey Mouse for some time doing mobile gaming. That was fun too. I was one of the early product managers at Uber at a time when the company was going through hyper growth. And then the last decade has been in vertical SaaS in beauty at Styleseat. And then the last several years, 7 years actually at Peak. So yeah, that's been my journey throughout. And today I'm the CPO at Peak, responsible for product management, design, and analytics, and excited about this conversation.
Fantastic. Well, appreciate that. And as much as I would love to dig into the solid state physics these days in NVIDIA and some of the others, I'm sure there's some interesting things there. But first, tell us, who is Peak and how do you see yourself or the platform as different from some of the other offerings for tour operators?
So Peak is the leader in travel vertical software. We do over $1 billion in bookings annually. We serve 10 million customers. Our software empowers tours and activity operators to better manage and grow their business. What that means is that we have a world-class online booking platform. We do point of sale, hundreds of automation tools, inventory management, dynamic pricing, waivers, marketing analytics, the whole suite. And our award-winning marketplace allows customers to book fun things to do, renting a boat or going ziplining or visiting an art exhibit. So really fun job. We've raised over $100 million from top investors like WestCap and Goldman Sachs. And to answer your question about competition, we've never really been competitively focused. I know a lot of people say that, but that's true to our heart. If you asked me, does your competitor have this feature, I would really struggle. And I would have to figure out where to even look. We know the market is huge. We want to create the best experience, the best product experience for customers. We've been recognized by G2 as the number one leader for tours and activity software. And on the marketplaces side, we're ranked in top 100 marketplaces. And as a company and a culture, we've received awards like the best workplace for innovators, the best startup employers. But as a product team, what differentiates are a couple of things. And this is what I hear talking to other CPOs is, oh, that's not very common. And the couple of things are, we are able to, when we're doing our prioritization exercise, we're able to tie a revenue number to every single feature request. So as a company, we're very focused on gathering feedback, quantifying feedback. So that's part of the culture. The second thing is we innovate very closely with our customers. We're always sitting down with them to look at what they're doing, really deeply understanding net problems. And then the third one was, you know, since the beginning of the company, and I can't take credit, I've only been there 7 years. The company's been around a little bit longer than that. We've had an innovation goal, which is every quarter, the product team is responsible for delivering something that brings the industry forward. So I think those are a couple of things that differentiate us. I'm sure it sounds like a textbook where every company says they're customer focused, but the love for building the best product is something that is, to me, our differentiation.
And beyond that, I think I love hearing leaders and founders just go back to the basics on some of these things, because at the end of the day, that's really what it comes back to. I'm excited to dig in between StyleSeat with Peak. I can't think of many people better to speak to about product prioritization for vertical SaaS. So that's where I want to dig in with you first. How do you think about going deep in one area versus another, expanding offerings, expanding reach into new market segments, so on and so forth? So maybe first, in my opinion, Peak is interesting because while you're vertical SaaS for tour operators, there's a whole bunch of different types of tour operators. So I'm curious, maybe how do you think about building features that, say, a bike tour operator or one specific type of business on your platform might need versus thinking about scalability across all of the customers on the platform? How do you think about that customization versus scalability sort of trade-off that comes up at times?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's such a pretty big question that covers a lot of things. I'll first answer product prioritization as a whole, and then I'll get into customization. So as it comes to product prioritization, I do think every company, every business has to create their own unique equation. What does it mean? Do I care about investing deeply as a vertical SaaS platform in winning a category? Do I expand my portfolio? Do I expand my reach, right? And there's a really good article by Tidemark. They have their vertical SaaS knowledge project, which I could link to later. I think that's been a source of inspiration for me for many years. But giving my point of view on that framework, the first thing is, hey, as a vertical SaaS company, you have to be focused on winning that category before you get distracted with, oh, I should go to Europe. That seems like a booming market. Or I'm doing helicopters. How about expanding that to hot air balloons? You really have to figure out how you win that category. It is cheaper to retain your existing customers than acquiring new customers. At Peak, we're heavily focused on customer retention. As I mentioned, we talk to customers every day. We monitor usage of our product. We partner very closely with our partner-facing teams to understand what they're hearing. So in terms of product prioritization, anything to do with retention and winning the hearts of the customers that we have today is number one. And to sum that up, it's what I like to say is growth follows love. So you have to have that love before you can think about growth. The second one is another one to win in your category is actually offering multiple products that provide a cohesive experience and streamline workflows for your customers. And especially as you go up market in vertical SaaS, that becomes a necessity. At Peak, we found that our customers appreciate having a suite of products that work seamlessly together. For example, our financial planning software works with an analytics platform, which gives great insights for owners to understand where they should make the investments. We also avoid and try as much as we can to ship our org chart. It means that we don't want our internal structure to get in the way of providing a great customer experience. So even though I say we're offering multiple products to the customer, it's really one product, right? That just talks seamlessly to each other. So that's second. And in the VSKP framework, we talked about win and then expand. And then the third one is extend. As a company, you have to be honest about your TAM, your total addressable market, what is actually serviceable, the SAM, and then your serviceable obtainable market, which is your SOM, right? And so when we think about, this is the third thing, which is when do we think about expanding our reach, we're making the decisions based on P&L and P&L statements, customers. We rank potential expansion paths based on the opportunity, based on the product fit, based on the feasibility. And that helps us stay focused on areas that would drive revenue for our customers and reduce costs for our customers. I know that was a pretty long answer, and that's really the part one of your question around product prioritization on how we think about winning a category, expanding and extending. I'll get into customization, but I want to pause in case you have any follow-ups there.
I do. And in fact, I would love to know. So first, we absolutely will link to the Vertical SaaS Knowledge Project, and we're big fans of some of that content from Tidemark. I'm actually curious to think, how did you define, and I think this will get us to the second question, but how do you define sort of that initial category you wanted to win? And what I mean is, are hot air balloons the same functionally as helicopter tours? Or was there a subsegment within that tour operator base that you said, this is where we're going to start and win, before we got on to first adding new products and then second, expanding the market?
Yeah, when we were quite early on in this journey, we identified who are our power users. We tried a different categories, really doubled down on the categories that we were winning. And at that time, it was like walking tours where we were really enjoying the product. And then we did go quite broad quickly across land, water, and air, because the market is so huge. And when I say land, water, and air, land would be a bike rental and water would be a boat rental. And then air would be a helicopter tour, for example. So we tried different verticals across land, water, and air, identified where we were winning. And this was based on data, based on our win rates, based on our retention rates, based on our own internal grading of the product fit. It's actually like over 100 sub verticals that come in, and we broke that down into, hey, let's talk about these categories and let's shortlist the ones that we're going to focus on. So that has been the approach. And every month, actually, we have a very disciplined process. We look at our verticals that we're winning. We look to see, has there been any wins or any developments in other categories? Has product released something that could be relevant for something that we haven't been reaching out to? And then slowly and gradually continue to expand our footprint, but you know, more thoughtfully, so that we're still focused on our strengths, but expanding our footprint.
And so one more follow-up. If you use the language of control point in those early days, what would you say was that early control point? Or what was that aha, this is the core of, we actually changed the way our customers do business a little bit and it makes their lives better? Was it the booking side of things? I'm curious.
Yeah, it started with the online booking side of things. And the founders will tell you the story where they were like, oh, it can't be that hard. It's a book button. And people are used to taking bookings over the phone. And we put a booking button on their website. And that should really be it. Because ultimately, that was the place where they were getting the traction. But as people who build vertical software will tell you, it is with vertical SaaS, you have to go really deep in that particular industry. So what started as a book button and online booking has now become, you know, we're 10 years plus 10 plus years, an entire product suite that we continue to evolve, solving different problems across marketing, analytics, operations, supply chain, and reporting and everything.
Fantastic. So thank you. So now I want to come back to that, some of the tension between scale and customization. And maybe the way in, you mentioned at one point through that evolution, you started to, quote, go up market. So I'm curious what you mean by going up market in that case. Was it just the larger, say, more established, more professional tour operators? Were you thinking about different segments? What did you mean by go up market?
Yeah, going up market, I would say, is ARR, average ARR per customer is how we look at it. But as we look to say, how deep do we want to go in this customization? It's really important to find your own balance between being customized so that the software speaks to you and you only, and building a platform that's actually scalable. So we talked a bit about bike tours versus museums, but actually the very same analogy applies to my time at StyleSeat, where, you know, StyleSeat is a software that helps you book your next beauty appointment, and also the B2B software that stylists use to run and grow the business. So very similar to Peak, we realized that the needs of barbers and nail salons and, you know, hairstylists were actually quite different. And before we knew it, we're trying to, I remember running a campaign around driving repeat bookings. You realize how unique each business is. And not only from a customer perspective and as to how often you go for your nails versus your hair, but also how barbers, for example, like to talk about their business is quite different, right? So we learned quite early that we needed to provide scalable configurations in our app to really cater the unique needs of each type of business. But going back to your question around, hey, how do you do this? Like, how do you decide how deep you go? I think there are a couple of things. The first is you have to have a clear platform vision yourself. The second one is you have to create comprehensive solutions. And then the third is you have to experiment and innovate. So I'll talk about all three of them. In terms of clear platform vision, as a product team, you have to define how to create a vision that aligns with where your business is going and where there are acute customer problems that you can solve. And when I say vision, it's not like, hey, write a vision statement. It's about, hey, like you need to be very clear about what are the problems you will solve and what are the problems that you will not solve, right? And going back to that barber nails example, maybe providing configuration email marketing so that people can satisfy, your customers can create their own brand is okay. But going really deep into a software that's very specific to a particular vertical may not be something you want to get into, right? So the first is having a clear platform vision. Where are you going to play or where you're not going to play? And defining where you play depends on where your current strengths are, but also where you want your future strengths to be. So that's the first one. The second one is creating comprehensive workflows for your customer. So that goes back to my point around integrations, and you want to solve the problems holistically for your customer. You don't want to ship your chart. You don't want it to be evident to your customer saying, oh, actually Peak or StyleSeed is solving this, but the other stuff that they're selling is actually not Peak. So how do you make it so that from a customer's perspective, it all feels comprehensive should be a top goal and top of mind for the product team. And then third one is experimentation. We've talked about the point about, hey, you, at the beginning, you have to see and even continuously you have to evolve and say, what's working for me? Before you put in a lot of investment, you have to validate your understanding, right? So an example would be when we started to go after helicopter tours and it seemed like it can't be that different from other things we do until you find out that it's actually quite important for helicopters to be able to manage the weight. Who's sitting in the back? You need to have buffers, for example, around people lying about their weight. So you need to be able to, people just always underestimate what their weight is, for example. And you start to create these configurations in the product, but you have to experiment first. You have to do some things that are not scalable before you actually create a robust weight management software inside your product. And then the last thing to sum this up is I don't think we can get 30 minutes into this talk without talking about AI, but with AI, it had to come up, but with AI, you have new Lego blocks. So as you're experimenting, as you're figuring out what is your platform vision, something that you might have said no to, it could become possible right now with fast advancements in AI. So keep those new Lego blocks in mind as you make your decisions about where you're going to play and where you're not going to play.
So maybe just to double click there quickly, I know some folks have said actually vertical SaaS is the ideal foundation for some of these AI products precisely because you have so much but very deep data. What I'm hearing you say is actually it might be a way to test to get to build functionality that otherwise might be too expensive or too difficult. I'm curious, do you think you have a data advantage? Does Peak have a data advantage when it comes to AI because you're a vertical SaaS player?
We definitely have the data advantage, but we also have the knowledge advantage, right? So we fully understand how a customer runs and grows their business. And that's something that you wouldn't see in horizontal SaaS. And so we have the data advantage. We have the deep knowledge advantage, which to me, AI isn't, we shouldn't launch AI products just because we have to only create AI solutions once you have a deep understanding of the problem. So that deep understanding of the problem helps us create great solutions, and AI is a way to get there.
Love it. Well, Navi, you said a couple things. First, I want to go back and just put a pin in. When you think about some of the trade-offs on product, it was comprehensive workflows, a clear vision for the product, but yet some space for experimentation. And earlier you said with Peak, you both tie a revenue number to all your features, but then there also you have an innovation goal for the product team each quarter. So I'm curious, how do you think about, let's call it the ROI on your product investments? Do you have a framework or a mental way that you benchmark, hey, here's where I'm going to bucket the work the product team is going to focus on?
Yeah, for sure. And I'd say that it's been an evolution, right? And I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago, I would say the whole tech industry was so focused on growth. So it was about, let's tie a revenue number. And even that, is this big of an opportunity or is this bigger and biggest? That was efficient. But especially in the last few years, I would say it's been more and more important for everybody in the company to be thinking about profitable revenue growth. And when you think about profitable revenue growth in the context of sales or marketing, that's very clear. Everything has a number assigned to it. Everything is a funnel. And how do you take those learnings to product has been a really fun evolution and a learning exercise. So about a year and a half ago, I was getting ready for a board meeting. And I decided to create my own product ROI model. I did not sleep for 1 week because there are really no other companies that are doing this. I couldn't borrow a framework from somewhere. But I was quite motivated to say, hey, why can we not put a revenue number? Like, why can't we create something and make it transparent for people to say, this is not a black box. This is the inputs and here is the outputs, right? I went deep to understand how sales, marketing parts of the organization look at everything. And I gave myself a goal. And to me, this was obviously very hard. And I couldn't come out of it and say, sorry, product ROI isn't a thing. But I knew the importance of it, right? I knew that the decisions that you're making in the product team, first of all, R&D is a huge investment. It impacts your competitive advantage a year, 2 years, and 3 years from now. And I want to be accountable and look back and say, that decision that I made, I thought the ROI would be this. And it's actually X or Y. So that was the goal that I set for myself. And what way I went about doing that was first building my own confidence in the investments we're making. So looking for data points from the last year, the last 2 years that give me confidence that this investment, this bucket of investments will actually lead to improved NDR, will lead to minimizing churn. Again, this sort of investment will make the sales team more productive because what are the data points that I've collected from prior years? It was making sure we had predictability in our investments, making sure we have validation across the board on any investments we're making. And then I started with a blank paper and started to categorize things into three buckets. The first one was infrastructure. Second one was around retention. And then the third one was expansion, new TAM, sales productivity, and so forth. So those are the three buckets. And then each of them came, the end product was a number, whether it's OPEX savings or revenue retained or revenue added, right? And very clear one slide answer on what is the investment you're going to make. And across these three buckets, how much should we expect in this year, the following year, and the year after that? So I had real fun doing that exercise. And it was much appreciated by the board, who are typically not used to seeing numbers around product investments. But more importantly, it's really been a change in mindset. So every time we're saying yes, we're like not only asking, what could this do? What does this mean from a customer perspective? It's been really amazing to say, hey, what would be the actual business impact? And let's be honest, are other returns going to come in 6 months, 12 months, or 18 months? And it's forced us to be very specific around scope and average time to return when we weren't actually thinking about that a few years ago.
Yep. Navi, really appreciate you sharing that framework again, scalable infrastructure, retention and LTV, and then expansion and new TAM. So I'm curious, meta fintech is a theme that comes up frequently in the show. Peak, as I understand, processes payments. You mentioned, I think, $1 billion of payments volume already. I think you have a capital product as well. Is it safe to assume you put those sort of embedded finance products in the TAM expansion bucket? I'm curious how you think about that relative to your framework.
Yeah, something like that, it could impact a new TAM, but I actually look at it as increasing DR or LTV because you could either decrease churn because of that, the product gets more sticky, or it could become a new monetization source. So it could become an upsell within the product. So I would put that in the second category today.
Okay. Already on the show, you've talked about the importance of these workflows feeling comprehensive. So staying on the theme of embedded finance, I'm curious, what do you look for in an embedded fintech vendor? Like, what makes a good embedded partner that you would build on so that you can create an experience that feels comprehensive and well integrated for the end customer?
Yeah, so it's three things. It's the impact on the customer, then second would be on the business, and then the third would be evaluation of the tech. So on the customer side, what I really look for is how acute is this problem? And when we started to expand into embedded fintech, I personally interviewed several of my customers. I personally interviewed many different vendors. And what I, the key aha from that was majority of the solutions were cool. And we were pretty disciplined about focusing on only on the acute problems as opposed to nice to haves. That was number one, which is let's understand the acuteness of the problem and what would it do to actually create a more comprehensive solution for the customers and a sticky product experience. The second one is on the business. As it comes to the expected return on LTV, on churn reduction, a big part of launching embedded products is understanding the rate of adoption. And something that I pay close attention to is, this is something that I can roll out scalably across the board, or does it have to be a one-on-one sell? And I would say that is what I've noticed is in majority of the fintech products, given how deeply you have to integrate with these fintech products, the sell is typically the limiting factor. So huge attention around what would that business case look like? Would we, if you put in this 6 months, 12 months of investment, how many customers would actually use it? How many customers would actually pay for this particular offering? And then the third one is around the tech. As a product person, I honestly have a very strong point of view on the product. I look at the customer fit. I look at the ease of implementation, but I actually spent time with the founders and the executives there at the fintech companies to understand what's resonating with the customers. What are the challenges? How are they thinking about innovation? What is their roadmap? What keeps them up at night? What are their differentiators? Those would be the three pieces, the customer, the business, and the tech.
Navia, you have incredible, clear frameworks for how you think about so many of these things. I appreciate so much you taking the time to share. Maybe lastly, before we wrap up, you have a track record with building and scaling pretty transformative products. I'm sure you get asked this question a lot, but what advice do you offer for aspiring product leaders these days, especially as it comes to navigating what's different today about the SaaS landscape?
For sure. And I'll say one word and then I'll expand on it. So the one word is be intentional. And you, Brian's going to be like, what, Navia? Everybody's intentional. But I'll get into the details here. I think it's really important to be intentional about defining your focus. We talked about where you're going to play, where you're not going to play. Being intentional about defining what could be your future strength. If you're in a high growth environment, and if you're actually doing a good job, the number of opportunities will continue to expand exponentially, which is why you have to be intentional about defining what could be your future strengths, being intentional about how you differentiate. We talked about innovating, not copying the competition, but it's more about uniquely defining the problems that are worth solving, not just uniquely defining solutions. And then the fourth piece would be it being intentional about where you spend your time as a leader. You know, I was reading this article yesterday that product people spend 39% of their time firefighting, which is a big investment. Mm-hmm. And how do you make, contain that 39%? How do you make the most of what's remaining? How do you make sure that you yourself as a leader are taking time to reflect, to grow as a professional, to grow your team? It all requires intentionality. You know, time really expands and contracts based on the decisions that you make. So to sum it up, be intentional about where you spend your time, about where you differentiate, how you differentiate, and how you define your focus.
And speaking of intentionality, I understand that you are quite passionate and put quite a bit of time and effort into helping female founders in particular start, thrive, grow their businesses in a predominantly male tech landscape. What specifically do you like to focus on there? How do you in particular like to try and help those female founders?
I have to say, I was quite fortunate early on in my career, even though I worked in male-dominated industries, to have strong female mentors, actively sought out and approached them for help whenever I needed it. And I was very thankful to have that, and which is why I like to give back to future leaders, to future women leaders. And I know there's a lot of work to be done to promote women advancing in the workplace. So a couple of things that I do is, at our company, I sponsor our women's ERG, our employee resource group. We have three pillars around education, around community and career development. So I personally lead the career development pillar. We, you know, invested doing focused events across all three pillars. And then broadly across the tech landscape, I'm quite active in the women communities and conferences. I mentor a number of women. I connect with other women leaders to amplify their voices. And as a working mom, the last thing I would say is, when I became a working mom at a startup, I actually was very clueless on what to do. And I've had help along the way. So I want to do that along for everybody else. If anybody's listening and wants my help, please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to give back what I've had the benefit to gain over the last several years.
Well, Navya, we've covered an incredible amount of ground today. Is LinkedIn the best way to reach you if folks have additional questions or any follow-ups? Or are there any other ways that are good to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is great.
Fantastic. Navya, again, thank you so much for sharing your time and your insight today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. We'll make sure to link to any resources that were mentioned in today's show in the show notes. Please also feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast or to connect with the Gusto Embedded team via LinkedIn. In particular, we'd love to hear any future guests you'd like us to have on the show. Thanks again for listening, and keep a lookout for the next episode.